If you are just starting out polishing paint or you want to level up your game, this is the podcast for you.
Hi, I'm Ivan.
I'm Nick.
And this is Jason Kilmer on the DIY Detail Podcast. The Sandman, one wing. As far as I'm concerned, probably the world's best at polishing paint.
Jason, welcome to the DIY Detail Garage.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, guys.
What do you think of it so far?
I like it. I like the old gritty feel. I mean, if this building could tell stories, it would tell a lot of stories.
Yeah, and you know, part of the stories would be this used to be a really dirty shop. We've cleaned it up a lot, and Jason is our first guest in the shop. This is the first vehicle that we're having in the shop. Yes, we have a little Ferrari Testarossa behind us.
No big deal.
Yeah.
No, actually, there's a lot of intentionality behind that.
Right.
This vehicle. You here, obviously you can see the sign behind us. We'll talk about C6 ceramics later, but you know, we're launching polishers, right? We're speaking to the DIY, the enthusiast out there, but also someone who does this for a living.
Right.
These products and what we have to teach, like there's a lot to it.
Right, and Jason just doesn't polish for a living. Jason chases perfection, and you've been doing this for 20 some years now?
Yeah, at that level, just about 20 years now.
Yeah. He hasn't found perfection yet. So those of you out there thinking that I make perfect paint, no. But you can make darn good paint, and that's what we're here to talk
about. Yeah, we talk about making darn good paint. You've spent a year on a vehicle door. Can we just do a quick bio real quick
sure.
of like, who is Jason Kilmer if you've been living under a rock? I know you've won a lot of awards, many of which people may not even have heard of. So
yeah.
Just to give someone the elevator speech of like who they're hearing from. Today.
Sure. Two of the major types of awards is Pebble Beach. That is European concourse type level. And then there's the Riddler, which is hot rod custom car. I've won them both multiple times.
Yeah.
And then a whole host of other wins, SEMA wins, magazine covers, have worked with many other companies in our industry, helping products, teaching, training, a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Jason is very humble, we'll give him that, but he's won more things than you could possibly think of winning. And he's been behind the scenes on a lot of the TV shows that you love and watch about, you know, the builders and that midnight frenzy of the car is being delivered to the customer tomorrow and we have to get it perfect and all that. Jason is the one behind the camera, or you know, when the cameras turn off, he's the one actually doing the work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a lot of these garages, this type of atmosphere where it's the floor's not as clean.
Yeah.
It's a dirty floor and we gotta do what we gotta do.
Yeah.
So I know that you've talked about Michael Jordan being kind of an idol of yours. I think of just more recently Kobe Bryant as the guy who just had this amazing work ethic. And if people want to get to your level, they got to start at the beginning. But I want, first of all, folks to know the level of effort you've put in over the years. And maybe it's a consistency thing where you practice a lot. But I don't know, like, where would you start with somebody if they want to get to be the best polisher that they can be?
Yeah.
Whether they've never done it before
sure.
or they've been a detailer for a while.
You have to start from somewhere. Whatever that is, everybody's different. Now, with me, it's completely different because I also have a disability. So to go backwards, I had to work that much harder just to be equal. So I took certain principles and procedures that I learned online. You know, we didn't have the online when I started.
You mentioned disability. If folks don't know you, can we start there?
I was born with cerebral palsy on my right side, but I also have no lack of depth perception on my left eye. So not only am I have a disability or two of them, but they're opposite. So that makes it even more of a challenge. So I look at it as it was always a challenge for me to get to a certain level. And as each stair level I took or step I took, I got a little bit better, a little bit better, and a little bit better. You have to give yourself grace, but also you have to hammer down and keep on going. If you, how far you want to go is how far you want to go. You have to put in the time, the effort, and the work to do it.
Where did you start? No internet. You're facing
no internet.
The obstacles that you're born
the
with.
Challenges,
like,
yeah.
Those have also been your blessings.
It's a It's a blessing that I have a disability, yes. Because I see things and I do things differently. I have to focus more on what I have than what I don't have. So that's why I really like the simplicity of your lineup, because it's simple. You don't have very many choices. So what that forces you to do as you go up in your skill set, right, as you go through this journey, it gives you not very many choices. So you have to really hone in on each product and know what it can do and what it can't do and everything else in between.
Excellent. Now, we're here to talk about polishing. We're here to talk about sanding. And one of your nicknames is the Sandman.
Sandman.
Yeah. And the reason for that is Jason, you know, a lot of people, they brag online that, hey, I spent 30 hours polishing a car. How many hours do you spend on a car?
Minimum, if we're sanding or polishing, doing anything a little more critical, it's 150 on a
and you've spent,
hours.
You spent months on some cars.
Months and a year on one.
Yeah. So there's a lot more involved to Jason's level of sanding and polishing. And most of us in the detailing world, whether you're a beginner or even a professional detailer, we're generally working on factory paint. And factory paint is very, very different than what Jason typically works on. You've worked on factory paint, obviously. Mm-hmm. You've worked on, you know, the Pebble Beach Concourse cars. A lot of them are original paint. Mm-hmm. And that actually brings more value and more points to them if they have that original paint. So in some cases, you're polishing for perfection. In some cases, you're polishing for preservation.
Preservation, exactly. Yeah.
And when we're dealing with factory paint, we want to polish for preservation.
Yep. On a perfect level, yes.
Yeah.
Where we say sanding and sand to improve, not remove, on factory clear is just trying to improve usually that scratch.
Right.
Usually that key scratch or that bike accident that your son or daughter may have done in your brand new car.
Right.
Trying to improve it. Sand to improve, not remove.
And factory clear, that's the car that you have, that you got from the factory. It hasn't been repainted in a body shop. It hasn't been custom built in one of your garages where you're doing these show cars.
Yep.
So this is the vehicle that was purchased, has the scratch. Mm-hmm. You say sand to improve, not remove.
Yep, exactly. So we take a couple passes at it and then hands off and we polish all our scratches. And at that point, it is what it is.
Yeah. And if you want to accept the fact that this scratch, if I can't polish it out, I'm going to repaint this panel, then you might want to go a little
further. You go a little bit further, exactly.
Right.
So if you were going to sand, hand sand, OEM clear coat?
I would say hand sand, because every pass you take, you have control. With a machine, there are some levels of control that you don't have. So I prefer to hand sand with a little block on a small scratch.
Yeah.
So you're not... Are you ever like hand sanding an entire panel, or that goes against what we're saying? We're just trying to emergency. It's so bad, I'm going to take it to the body shop. I'll try to just acutely handle this particular.
Usually,
scratch.
We just stay within the perimeter of the scratch.
Okay.
Yeah.
On OEM.
On OEM.
Yeah.
Yes.
When he's doing the show cars, obviously he's polishing, sanding and polishing every square inch, including the engine, the transmission, the tunnel, the frame, the suspension. You name it, he's polished it.
Yep.
And they're two very, very different levels of what people are doing.
Very much so.
Most detailers are working on factory paint. And again, sanding on factory paint has its advantages, but it has its disadvantages. And one of them is, you know, a lot of people, we get this question a lot. How do I remove orange peel?
Sand it.
Yeah. But is it a good thing to remove orange peel?
No. With today's factory clear coats that we have. In the early 90s, the late 80s, I've done a lot of those cars. We had a lot more material. Now we don't have that. And it's different paint, different materials. A lot of these panels are aluminum. Most of them are aluminum.
Yeah.
And then plastic. Beforehand, with all the paint, we had steel, which is different. So it's a different level that we have now. And the cost of the vehicles are higher. So It's a catch-22, honestly.
Yeah. And, you know, today to repaint a car is more expensive than the first cars I owned that I paid new.
Yeah.
So, you know, a good paint job is upwards of $10,000.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a quick bumper repair could be $2,000 or $3,000.
Right.
So that's why we never really tell you to use sandpaper on OEM clear coat.
No.
So, but if you ever were to do it, What's the most aggressive grit you would ever use on a scratch?
I typically tell people no lower than 1,500.
And the lower the number, the more aggressive.
The lower the number, the more aggressive, yeah. And just a few passes, and that's it. You just have to be okay with it being there or not being there. Because you want the paint on your car.
And so you do that, and then would you go to 2,000 after that?
Yes, I step my grits up, so 15, 2,003. Usually, if you do a good job on those previous grit scratches, you can get by sometimes with just hand rubbing and being really controlled and precise.
What do you mean hand rubbing it?
Just taking a towel, a microfiber towel, and some polish and just hand rubbing it.
The final sand scratch out?
The final sand scratch
out. Yeah, 2,000 grit, if you've done it right, like you said, the finish that's left by 3,000 grit is very easily polished.
Yeah.
And some sandpaper manufacturers will sell you a 5,000 and an 8,000 grit, which is basically polished at that point.
Yeah, it becomes very easy at that point.
One thing that I asked you about when we first met 6 years ago at the rag company in Idaho, I said, what scares you? And you said every time you put sandpaper to paint. Uh-huh. So do not take this lightly. Can you communicate that message in case people thought, we're now advertising, just go sand the Ferrari?
No. Because we're taking material off a car that actually should be on the car. On the show car side of things, it's different. It is designed to take off material. So we have more material to work with to take off the material to get it as flat and smooth as possible. On an OEM level, we don't have that built into the paint system.
So the fear?
Yeah.
The fear is making a mistake that has to go to the paint shop.
And cost a lot of money.
And cost a lot of money.
And also, on something like this, as an example, if this vehicle were repainted, it devalues the vehicle. So the factory paint is worth its weight in gold. Probably is worth its weight in gold. The prices these days. But basically, you can never replace the factory clear coat. The body shop clears, it's a completely different paint system that they can do in the factory than they do in a body shop. In a factory, they're baking it at 325 degrees. We can't do that in a body shop. When you get the booth up to like 140, 150, some people push it a little higher than that. But the car is assembled. There's plastics everywhere. There's all sorts of things going on in the car. Whereas in the factory, when they're painting these, they're empty. It's just metal that's going into a tank, a primer, and then goes down the line. So they can heat it up much higher than we can do with today's cars. And like Jason said, a lot of these cars have plastic parts on them now. And the way they're painting them in the factory cannot be replicated in the body shop.
That makes sense. So obviously having that healthy level of fear is good. All right, let's just talk about broadly speaking. There's someone out there watching this or listening to this podcast. They want to get better at polishing paint. Mm-hmm. What is something?
Back that up.
Okay.
They want to start polishing paint.
They want to start polishing paint.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you've never done it before.
Yeah.
How would you start?
I like to go with a rotary. And you can go as simple as buying a cordless drill. Just to feel how that rotation is on a painted surface, preferably a junkyard hood, a fender, something like that. Get the motion, get the skill down of how the tool is. That's first and foremost. Once you get that down and you start to feel comfortable, then you can see how you're doing with different lights and spotlights. And then from that point, just keep on practicing a little bit higher and a little bit higher and really test your skills. That's how I usually like tell people to start out.
You mentioned light. I think lighting is so critical when you're looking at paint. I know that you sometimes never use any, because we're teaching a method that is simple and works for everybody and gets them to perfectly acceptable, super shiny paint, depending on what they use, whether it's wool, waffle, depending on the paint, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? We're talking about taking it to this degree with Jason, right?
So
I think lighting is super important. What if people don't even know what they are seeing? They don't know what they're seeing or not seeing. Like, what light should they use? What advice do you have for lighting?
Mm-hmm. I would say just a single point light. So that could be your flashlight on your phone. Shut off all the lights, or if it's dark outside like it is right now, you shine that singular source about 4 feet off the surface, what you're trying to see, and you can see most of the time the little shiny scratches and swirls.
Yeah.
That's our baseline. That's what we have to work with.
And they're going to start to see what you see using that kind of lighting, right? Mm-hmm. So you're just starting out, maybe a cordless drill, a rotary. You know, we teach a flat pad. How do you like to help people with a rotary for the first time?
Yeah, so it's a simple movement. You use one hand. You just pull the trigger and keep your hand. You got to keep good posture and good body mechanics. Keep it within your frame of your body. And then I just teach people just to move it. If you want to go to the right, I tilt it to the right or the left, and then tilt it to the right and come back. It's a simple movement. It's within 2 to 3 degrees tilt.
Yeah, the tilt is not enough to lift the pad off the surface. It's just, it's not really a tilt even. It's almost just a bit.
It's pressure on the outside.
Yeah. Just to see what it does and get familiar with what little micro movements on my wrist affect this polisher.
Wait. So you'll notice when I'm polishing, I hold the machine with this finger wrapped around the cord.
Yep.
And one finger underneath the front. I'm letting the machine balance itself. And Jason does the left and right movement. I do the up and down.
Yeah.
Ends up being the same thing. So I vary the movement by my backhand, usually my right hand, going up and down. So if you lift up a little bit, it goes one way. If you go down, it goes the other way.
Why do you recommend folks maybe try a rotary first?
Because it's a smooth action. With a DEA, it's a great tool, fantastic tool to have since the invention of the DEA sanders and polishers that we have. But a rotary, just a smooth action, and it's a little bit hard to master, so I like to start there as a baseline. Because a DA is fairly simple to use.
But if you've never used either, maybe the rotary is less complicated because you haven't heard all the spiel about the rotary going to make you burn paint. And if you can get the rotary, then the DA is a lot simpler to use?
They're different movements. So that you use the tool a little bit differently, but it's still the same body mechanics.
Yeah.
So as long as you keep it within your body frame, and just keep it nice and even, you're going to be okay.
And the DA, because of the vibration, or not the vibration, but the oscillating motion of it, it's a little easier to control in one way, but a little harder in another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It, like Jason said, it's a very different machine. But I always start teaching people with the rotary as well. And the reason for that is, first of all, if they followed any Facebook or, back in the day, forums and stuff like that, they're afraid of the rotary. It's this big monster that's going to rip paint off the car within 5 seconds. And getting them over that fear is like, oh, wait a minute, this is easier than I thought. And someone who's never, ever polished before, remember at Car Supplies Warehouse, we had Jason's wife, Amy, and she'd never touched polisher in her life. And which one did she prefer?
The rotary.
Yeah. We had Emily here. Same thing, Emily the audio nerd.
They're smooth and quiet.
Yeah.
I get it now. I was never a rotary guy until I heard your sermons on high and, finished with a rotary, and it's like, I'm interrupting you. But the rotary is awesome, and if you start with it, I could see how that's a good foundation.
Yeah.
Because I started 6 years ago. I just had a dual action in my hand right away,
And when we started, the dual action wasn't the thing.
Not even on the radar.
No.
There wasn't even microfibers.
No.
So.
Yeah.
What did you cut with?
No, he's talking about the towels.
Oh, the towels. Yeah, terry towels. Yeah.
We were using t-shirts on show cars.
Yeah, t-shirt or diapers.
Diapers, yeah, that too, yeah.
If you had money, you had cotton diapers.
Yeah. I wonder.
That's why I had t-shirts. I didn't have any money.
Oh my gosh, that's wild. So how did your, my business when I had a shop was Hawk Pro Detailing, and I looked at it like, I see defects in your paint like a hawk views its prey. Like, I looked at the eyesight as a very important thing. So I wonder, with you, your disability, what did that enable you? I'm sure some senses are more heightened and others aren't. So what did that help you with in terms of polishing paint?
So my right eye is my dominant eye. It goes in and out of focus like a camera. So I can see defects a lot quicker than normal people can.
And you learn over time to not look what's in the paint. You're looking just at the surface of the paint. And playing with lighting, you see things very different. If you can learn to look at the surface of the paint and not look into the paint, that really makes a difference. But it takes a lot. Like, you've mentioned it a couple times. I'll see something on a car from 10 feet away, and you're going, like, how did you see that? You're the only person,
you and then a friend of mine, Jamie Gonzalez, and so like both of you, and then Jason as well, with backgrounds in painting and body shops, like, who have painted cars before. You guys show me stuff that I thought I knew everything, whatever. I didn't know anything, but I thought I saw everything, and I didn't see any of the stuff you guys were pointing out.
No, and you know, for Jason here, you do show cars, you're doing them in that shop and that frenzy of, you know, everybody trying to sell the car at the last minute. You get it as good as you can, and then you bring it to the show floor with different lighting, and you see stuff you didn't, you've never seen before.
Yeah, we bring spray guns, we bring polishers, we bring sandpaper, we bring anything that can happen, does happen, and will happen, we bring it with us.
Yeah.
So how does that wisdom translate then to the person who's just starting out or wanting to get better? You know, maybe they want to remove defects, right? But they may not realize that by removing defects, that inflicts its own scratch pattern, and they have to polish that out. Yeah. Like, remember, this is people just starting out. They may not know any of this.
We've already forgotten
half the stuff.
You just have to start somewhere and use something as your baseline. If you want, basically, paint's supposed to look like colored glass. If a piece of glass was colored and no scratches in it, that's what we would like to get, as close as possible.
Yeah. But again, that's the show car.
Yeah.
The daily driver, when someone would come to my shop and say, I want you to wet sand, I want you to eliminate the orange peel, I want a piece of glass.
Yeah.
We could do that. That was a service we offered. But my question to them would be, what kind of trailer are you picking it up on?
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, huh?
Yeah. What? And if it's a daily driver, sure, you can do that. But you're inflicting a lot of wear and tear on yourself, because keeping it clean is going to be difficult. Everything is going to mark that paint.
Well, and now you can see it more because you've removed the peel, which hides a lot of that stuff. Now you can see it even more.
Now, orange peel, I know what it is, but I didn't know what it was for a while.
Sure.
What is orange peel? And then once you tell me that, is having a lot of it mean that you have a lot of clear coat on the paint?
Okay. Orange peel is basically, that's what it is. You look at a surface of an orange skin, and it looks kind of peely and textury. That's what, when clear coat comes out of a robot or a spray gun, it comes out peely. Now, you can adjust that from a manufacturer standpoint or a body shop standpoint, but it's going to come out peely at some level.
Yeah, because the way the paint is transferred from the gun to the car is miniature droplets. And those droplets, if you think of, you know, depositing drops of water on the surface, we all love beads on our car, right? That's basically what it's doing, but we're putting beads on top of beads on top of beads, and you're ending up with this undulating surface. And another way of looking at it, and I've seen cars that are almost this bad, golf ball. Mm-hmm. So it's the texture of the orange. That the texture on the orange peel is what we're referring to. And a golf ball would be an extreme example, and I'm sure there are cars out there that have been, you know, painted in the backyard with a spray can that they get pretty close to a golf ball.
Yep. I've seen better and I've seen worse than that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think a common misconception could be, because I used to think this, is that a lot of that look meant I had a lot of clear coat to work with. Let me grab the sandpaper on OEM paint and start to go to town. Mm-hmm. That's not the case.
No.
It's actually probably most further from the truth, because you can adjust how things are sprayed to look really poor, but where did the paint go? It didn't go on the car. Sometimes it goes up in the air. So if it doesn't go on the car, it's in the air, that means you don't have as much material to work with.
Yeah, and when you think about it, the most expensive part of a car today is the paint. It's more expensive than the engine. It costs more, maybe not a car like this, but we'll talk your average daily driver, you know, your Chevy, your Ford, your Honda, whatever. You can get a long block engine installed for a lot less than repainting the car with a quality paint job.
Mm-hmm.
You can get, you know, there's some franchises that don't. Mm-hmm. Do they still do $1,000 paint job?
No, they're even way up.
Okay, but basically you can get that, you know, that cheap paint job is still more expensive than an engine. So you need to maintain your paint. And with the manufacturer's aspect of it, that is the most expensive. They're literally paying paint to dry. So the less coats they can put on, the less amount of time it spends curing, the faster they can crank the cars up.
So there's a reason why they're putting less clear on the vehicles, yeah. And again, why you should be very careful when you're thinking about heavy defect removal.
Right, and if we think about the Orange Peel as peaks and valleys, well, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, yeah, the peak was a lot higher, and the valley gave you that, you know, 50 micron or 2 mils thickness. Now, the peak is at that 2 mil thickness, and the valley is maybe down at 1 mil.
Or less.
Or less.
Or less. Yeah. Do you use a paint thickness gauge?
Yeah, I use it as a guide on OEMs when it's been resprayed, body work, that sort of thing. It doesn't even read on the gauge because we have so much material to try to get it as flat and level as possible.
Yeah. Is there a brand you recommend? Is the $50 one on Amazon or the $2,000 one? Like, does it matter?
I think they're pretty inconsistent in general.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother podcast, but yeah.
Yeah, and you know the paint thickness gauge, like Jason said, it's just a guide. Yeah.
Right.
It gives you a general idea, but if you put the paint thickness gauge on the vehicle, and whether it be a $50 one or a $5,000 one, you put on the paint, you move it over a quarter inch, it's going to give you a different reading because that paint is never the same thickness throughout. Mm-hmm. And even after you've done, you know, countless hours on a panel or days on a panel, it's still not...
It's not super consistent. I mean, yeah. Within a half an inch, it may go, you know, quite a bit more or less.
I'd like to settle a debate once and for all. Cut with a rotary or finish with a rotary? Mm-hmm.
I personally like to cut with rotary. If I have the time, I like to finish with a rotary too. But a lot of times we don't have that time, so it's nice to have the DA as that really solid middle step and finishing step. Or, you know, like I said, if I have the time, I really enjoy using a rotary. I honestly do. As a lot of times now we don't have that time on some of these projects.
Interesting. Can you talk about the time part? And again, we're talking about...
hundreds of hours.
Hundreds of, like, the jobs you do, you know, we're listening. So why does it take longer to finish with a rotary in your world?
Because we're looking at it from a microscopic, small, like, half inch away with the lights off. So I'm going after every little flaw. The problem is when you put one flaw in, you replace it with 10 other flaws. So when you use a rotary and you're looking at it, say it's jet black, and you're looking at it from a microscope level, it takes more time to be consistent and slow and methodical. It just takes a great deal of time.
I think the finish with a rotary is phenomenal, though. But I can see how at that level maybe you see more. I don't know. We've talked about this a million times.
Not only that, we've designed a system that's simple and easy and accessible. Some of the tools that Jason is using, well, not the tool itself, but the pads and the polishes, they're a lot more specialized, and finishing with them takes a lot more skill. Yeah. We have a rotary jeweling pad that literally anyone can pick up and finish without swirl marks and things like that if they follow our instructions.
Which is lowest speed on your rotary,
yeah.
Flat pad, lightly damp pad.
Yeah, no pressure.
No pressure.
You know, enjoy yourself. And the enjoy yourself is actually the most important part. If you're stressed out doing this, it's not going to end well. But if you're doing this as, wow, this is fun, it's easy, it's you know, it's enjoyable to do, then you're going to do a better job.
It's my favorite. The rotary jeweling pad with the system that you taught me, like, my favorite. It's smooth, it's quiet, it's enjoyable.
Right.
And it feels like, not that I'm tuned out, but the way that I used to polish paint, I was trying to be as good as you. And it was like, I was in that dark shop until 3 a.m, like, not, you know, not good for my health, not good for my family. Like, but I was like, do I see a DA like tick? You know what I mean? If so, then I got to redo this. Like,
yeah.
And once you taught me the rotary jeweling pad, it's like, I stopped looking at paint that way. So I wasn't even trying to do that. And, even though I wasn't ever getting close, I just didn't even,
You
know, I thought I was trying to achieve perfection, whatever that was. And this method just works.
Yeah.
And you just see it from 5 feet away like a normal human would, and you're like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
But I don't even know what I don't know about the things you do. And
yeah. When I'm called in situations, it's usually not a good thing. So it's not fun. It's not enjoyable. It's just getting the job done in a very short time frame.
Yeah. And that short time frame, even though he spends hundreds of hours on the car, it might be 20 hours a day for 10 days straight.
Yeah, we did, the last big project we did was a Jeep. I actually did two Jeeps for SEMA in 2.5 weeks. One of them we did in 4 days from very low grit all the way up.
Does that stress you out just thinking about it, or is that just another?
It makes my back sore right now.
But yeah.
Yeah, it was a rough 4 days.
Yeah, it's a big job. It's something that you don't take lightly, and polishing should be fun. It can be fun. On Jason's level, it's not only an art form, but it's very much, you know, hours and hours of skill. You go into your garage. If he's at home,
yeah,
it's
completely different. I get my famous acrylic panel that I love to polish on, and I just zone out and just use the rotary and just see what I can do.
Yeah.
It's really testing. At that point, it's testing my skills. Can I get it a little bit better? Can I do it a little bit faster?
Yeah.
That's my focus.
Right. Jason is very much, you know, like I mentioned before, the professional athlete of this, you know, of detailing. And the fact that he'll record himself doing it and then spend time watching it to see, okay, I could have improved here. You study your body
posture,
as much as the polishing itself. And that is something that a lot of people, the body mechanics of what they're polishing, they're overreaching, they're hunched over, they're, you know, doing the, I want to smell the polish sort of thing. That has its place, and Jason is one of the people that has to do that because of the situation he's in. But if you're polishing your own car at home, stand up straight.
Yeah.
Be square. Don't go past your shoulders. There's a lot of things that we've repeated many, many times on this channel, and we'll keep repeating. So don't worry if you missed it before. We'll say it later. But having that posture is going to make detailing your car a lot simpler,
enjoyable.
And you'll get a better result.
Yeah. Yeah,
I know you've used our system, and I sent you products a while ago. Anything that you've played around with at home that you've found out is kind of a fun way or a unique way to use gold standard polish?
Yeah,
or anything?
I use less. Once the pad is what I call happy, right? And sometimes I use this trigger spray. Sometimes I like to just dab it. And I like to feel things and touch things. I know that's not the way to do it, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Using less is much better on that particular product.
So you find it, you just don't need much, right? You can work it for a long time.
A dot per panel, like a dot.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all you need. Once it's happy and going the way you want it to go.
What's the most unique, like, pad polish combo with a polisher that, like, got you the finish that you need, like finicky paint that you, like, couldn't finish down at your level, and it was like, I don't know, I used a handsaw, and you, I don't know, like what's the craziest combo that you needed to get that paint right?
One time I actually finished out with a compound.
With a compound?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't even remember what the car was, but it was some really rare, expensive European car. And everything we threw at it, every combination, every tool, just didn't work. So we ended up going kind of back to the basics. And it was a firm foam pad and a pretty aggressive compound. And it was slow speed, and we just kept on working it until it was almost transparent, like almost not there.
Was it a DA or rotary?
It was a DA.
Okay, yeah, low speed, and just worked it.
Yep, worked it for like probably 20, 30 minutes per panel.
What?
Super slow. Where?
Because
it was so soft, I couldn't touch it with a brand new towel.
Yeah.
It was just that finicky.
Oh, man. Detailers out there, you think you've had finicky paint before. That's a wild story.
Yeah. And, you know, Jason is working on these repainted vehicles, and they'll have multiple coats of clear. And sometimes the painter, you know, between coat A or, you know, coat 6 and coat 9, they didn't mix the paint properly.
Yeah, or they're 2 inches off the surface than they were before. Or some human variable that really plays a factor in how I perceive it and how I feel it and how it's responding.
So one thing, and I don't want to take this too much longer, you recommend is getting a junkyard hood.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, what advice do you have for someone out there? We're talking about DIYers, people who've been on cars their whole life. How do I find a junkyard hood? Which one do I get? Like, where do I go? Like, let me start there, because I've been there, and I was wondering this too.
I prefer just going to a body shop. body shop down the street. They have junk panels. If you can grab a trunk or a hood, which is something that you can put on a table or some sort of stand, and just, you know, buy your system and just see what you can do. Yeah. Look at it with a light, with a camera light, one single source.
DIY method.
That's easy. And just try something and see what kind of result you get. And if it's you're getting a good result, can you go a little bit more? Do you need to go a little bit more? That's personal preference.
And you're doing it on a panel that's you're not risking a nasty repaint, right? Yep. You have a freedom to try things.
Yep. Try it. Try speeds. Try pressure. Try different tools.
Try sandpaper with a block if you want, right?
You can try whatever you want at that point.
Yeah.
And that becomes the enjoyable part. That's why we detail, is because it's enjoyable. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
That becomes enjoyable. When you do it at a certain level, it loses some of its joy, but you know, the rewards in that are winning the awards, you know, collectively grouping up with a team of craftsmen that you're long, you know, I've been friends with some of them for over 20 years now. So that's a different segment, but yeah, polishing paint is enjoyable. And you know, when you're like, wow, I did that. I took some machines, some pads, some combinations, but I did that. It's rewarding.
Yeah.
It's so rewarding. We're actually recording this the night before that you watch this. So Jason's here for a couple more days. So we actually want to know, what do you want to know from Jason? We read all these comments, we'll answer them. We're in the DIY Detail Garage.
Right, so this is the first video in the improved DIY Detail Garage. There's still a lot of work to do. You might have heard the electrician in the background, you know, dropping a few things. That's fine. But basically, it's still a work in progress. But we wanted to bring Jason here as our first person invited in the shop. I've known Jason for many years.
Many years.
And I have an immense respect for Jason and the work that he does. There are not many, might be a handful of people in the world that can do what he can do with paint and polish.
Yep.
So having Jason here is really an honor for me. And, you know, we found this Ferrari. It's local here in Omaha. It'll be on be in the auction block soon. So if you want a car that Jason's polished, this one will be for sale eventually. But this is a low mileage. It has less than 10,000 miles. It's all original. It's a black book car. So it's gone through all the factory specified maintenance. Everything is there. Jason's not going to be sanding on this car.
No.
But my plan is
you
to...
You couldn't pay me enough.
No, exactly.
My plan is to kind of go through it with you and ask, how do you inspect paint? What are you looking for? How do you evaluate? What is your test spot process? So we've already got some ideas, but if there's something burning, you know, and you really want to know what his thoughts are on it, please ask us and maybe we can get it into some content in the next couple days.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, if you want to get a hold of this guy, Jason Kilmer, on Instagram.
Instagram's the best way.
You find him eventually, you know, sometimes on Facebook once every
I pop up every here there. Oh, where's Kilmer at? Oh, he's there.
Yeah. But Instagram, but he'll be here. We'll be answering the comments from this. Of course, every video we do, and a lot of people don't know this, but we do it as a premiere. So when the video is originally released, and we do it at the same time every week. So, you know, you can
podcast every Friday.
Yeah, same bat channel, same bat time.
Yes.
Or same DIY channel, same DIY time.
You're dating yourself, Adam.
I know, yeah. But with that, we do a live premiere and we're both on there chatting with the people that are there. We usually get at least 100 people, and now, you know, those numbers are growing exponentially. The other way you can get a hold of us is through our Facebook group. Now we have a Facebook page, like any business, but we also have a Facebook group that's almost 50,000 people strong. And
in the description, there's a link, just click it.
Yeah, and it's a very fun place because if someone is not being friendly or polite, they disappear from the group for some reason. But, you know, it's a safe, fun space to ask questions, and there's no question that's too new. There's no question that's too basic. There's no question that's stupid. There's occasionally a stupid answer, and like I said, they disappear. But the people are there to help. And we have professionals on that group that have been detailing, like myself, for 40, 50 years. And we have people that this is their first day. And that person that it's their first day detailing, they might have something to teach to everyone else. So just because you're new in the business doesn't mean you're not alert. You can't help someone. Jason and I both do trainings. I learn as much as the students do every training I do. And I'm sure you're the same.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because someone that's new and fresh might have a different spin on it, or they might receive what you've information you've given to them a little bit differently than you've thought before. I probably trained 400 or 500 people.
Yeah.
At a high level, you know. And then also beginner stuff too with some other companies. So I've trained a lot of people and I've heard, I think, most questions, but there are questions sometimes that I'm like, I don't know. I'll have to
That's
get back to you.
Yeah.
So if you want to know more about some of the mistakes that I feel like I've made in the past, we have a video here. Top 10 polishing mistakes. Just a fun one. And continue the learning process. Thanks for watching.
Thanks, Jason.